Good morning, everybody. A really warm welcome to St. John's this Sunday morning, Mothering Sunday. And my name's Gavin, I'm the vicar here, and I'll be leading this service with Amy, who's the curate here. You'll be hearing from her a bit later on. And we're really grateful, especially to Rob and to Jill, who pulled together the musicians this morning, because today is one of those six or seven times a year when we have a celebration service, when instead of having our 9:15, our more structured service, and our 10:45, our very informal service, we come together for a celebration all together on Mothering Sunday. So Mothering Sunday, it's a little bit strange, isn't it, having Mothering Sunday here in the middle of Lent. You know, we're about halfway through Lent, this season of penitence, of examining ourselves, working out what God is calling us to do, to change. And here we have this celebration in the middle of it. What's that all about? Well, it's because in the church, this is very definitely Mothering Sunday, not Mother's Day. Okay, today isn't really about mothers. Although we're very grateful for mothers, but not everybody's got a great experience of a mother. What we're talking about now is mothering, that sort of nurturing, that bringing people on, developing in them the gifts that God has given them and helping them to flourish. That's what we're going to be exploring today. And really that's what Lent is about as well. It's about taking time to examine what's going on in our lives so that we can be brought into a new place of flourishing. So we're going to be exploring that by looking at the Old Testament book of Ruth. We'll be doing that a bit later on and working out what does that mean for us as people who have experienced nurture and people who can give nurture to others. Right, we're going to hear this bit of the story from the book of Ruth. And we're going to jump straight into chapter 2. So I'm going to give you a little summary of chapter 1, the story so far. So it's a story about Naomi, and Naomi was married, she had a husband, and they had two boys who were sort of at that age where they were just about to get married, you know, they were sort of nearly grown up, and they lived in a country called Judah. So they lived in Judah, and they were Judeans themselves, but there was a famine in the land. There wasn't enough for them to eat. And so this family decided the best thing they could do was to go to another country, to a country called Moab. So the family move to Moab. Now they're Judeans living in Moab. And this is where there's some bad news, and then there's some good news, and then there's some more bad news. I just want to prepare you for that, because I don't want you to be too shocked. Bad news, I'm afraid Naomi's husband dies while they're living in the country of Moab. But some good news, both of their boys get married to Moabite women. But then some really bad news, I'm afraid both of the boys die. So we end up with Naomi and her two daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah. Now you see, Ruth and Orpah live in the land of Moab, and they're from the land of Moab. But Naomi lives in the land of Moab, and she's from the land of Judah. And she hears that things have got better back in Judah, that there is some food there now. And she thinks her best bet is to go back to that land. You see, as somebody who's unmarried and who has no men in the household, in that time, in that place, it was very difficult to find a job. It was very difficult to feed yourself. So she thinks the best thing is to go back to the place where I come from. But while they're on the journey, Ruth and Orpah going with Naomi, they have a discussion. And Naomi says, why are you coming with me to Judah? There's nothing there for you. You're Moabites, and you're coming to a land of Judah. It's better for you to go back and to stay in Moab with people who are like you, with relatives, distant relatives. Well, one of the daughters-in-law thinks that's a very good idea. Orpah decides she's going to go back to Moab. But the other one, called Ruth, says she's going to stay with Naomi. Whatever it takes, she's going to stick with her. And she says that wherever Naomi goes, she will go. And her people will be her people. And Naomi's God will be her God. And so they continue on back to Judah. So that's where we pick up the story. Naomi and Ruth are now in the land of Judah. They're still in a very precarious state. Who's going to look after them? How are they going to find food? How are they going to live in this land? And Naomi gives Ruth some advice. So Colinette's going to come and read the story from there.
The reading is from Ruth 2, verses 1 to 17, and can be found on page 211 of the Pew Bibles. Now, Naomi had a kinsman on her husband's side, a prominent rich man of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain, behind someone in whose sight I may find favour." She said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she went. She came and gleaned in the field behind the reapers. As it happened, she came to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz came from Bethlehem. He said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." They answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his servant, who was in charge of the reapers, "To whom does this young woman belong?" The servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the Moabite who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab." She said, "Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the reapers." So she came, and she has been on her feet from early this morning until now, without resting even for a moment. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Keep your eyes on the field that is being reaped, and follow behind them. I have ordered the young men not to bother you. If you get thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn." Then she fell prostrate with her face to the ground and said to him, "Why have I found favour in your sight, that you should take notice of me when I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. May the Lord reward you for your deeds, and may you have a full reward from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." Then she said, "May I continue to find favour in your sight, my Lord? For you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, even though I am not one of your servants." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some of this bread, and dip your morsel in the sour wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he heaped up for her some parched grain. She ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she got up to glean, Boaz instructed his young man, "Let her glean even among the standing sheaves, and do not reproach her. You must also pull out some handfuls for her from the bundles, and leave them for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Wow, isn't that an interesting story? I wonder what it must have been like for Ruth, coming from Moab to a country where people were different and sounded different, and she didn't know how people normally behaved. I wonder what it was like for Ruth, wondering where she would get food to eat. I wonder what it was like for Ruth when she went to this field of somebody she didn't know to see if they would mind if she picked up the bits of barley that had been left behind. I wonder what it was like to work all day long in the hot sun picking up the bits of barley lying around on the ground. I wonder what it was like when Boaz came and offered her something to drink. I wonder what it was like when at the end of the day he invited her to come and eat with him the same food that he was eating. What an interesting story. So in that story we've just had read, it's interesting how Boaz treats Ruth really well, doesn't he? And that's not really a coincidence. That's because Boaz was one of the people of God, and he lived in a community who were the people of God. And they had been taught by God in books like Leviticus, you can go and read the sorts of things that they were taught, that it was really important that they looked after foreigners, people from the outside, widows, people who'd lost their husband and so didn't know how to look after themselves, the fatherless, people who didn't belong to a family. You see, families were really important in those days. There was no state, there was no government, there was no NHS, there were no social services. If you needed looking after, the family was where it happened. So God taught his people to look after people who didn't have family, to help them, to nurture them, so that they also would have a chance to flourish. So I wonder if you were listening to that story really closely, can you think what were some of the things that Boaz and the people around him and the people who worked for him, what were they doing that helped Ruth and Naomi? Have a little think about that, and then I'm going to get you to make some suggestions. I'm going to get somebody to run around with a microphone. Would somebody like to help me by running around with a microphone? Sam? Perfect. Come here, mate. I've got two microphones. Would somebody else like to help me by running around with a microphone? Yeah, come on down. Who's that? Oh, no, it's the one whose name I always get wrong. Thomas? Yes. How are you? Great. If you two would like to, one at the back, one at the front, and we're going to get people to stick their hands up and tell us what sort of things were they doing. There we go. That's ready to go. And just to help you as well, we're going to have a picture up on the screen that might help you to remember what was going on in the story. Oh, God, this is, I know this doesn't really help you at all. It's just really cute because, look, you can make the chicken jump up and down. And you can, you can make the guy at the back work really hard. And the mouse here, I don't know what the mouse is doing. He's just jumping around in the water jars. Anyway, so what was going on? What was going on in the story that helped Naomi and Ruth? What were Boaz and his people and the people who worked for him doing? Carol, do you want to run around there to find somebody with a hand up?
She was allowed to have a drink of water.
She was allowed to have a drink of water. Yeah, absolutely. So she'd been working in the hot sun. And Boaz says to her, well, why don't you have some water? What else? Who's been listening? Down here?
That she was allowed to eat what he ate.
Yeah, so he invited her to come and eat what he was eating. Have you found anybody at the back yet, Sam?
He allowed the shearers to leave handfuls of wheat for her.
Yeah, so he told the people working for him to leave some of the barley that they were harvesting on the ground so that she would be able to come and pick it up. They're still working really hard.
He told the young men to leave her alone.
He did tell the young men to leave her alone. Look, actually, there's another cute little bit. So... here we go. So he gives her something to eat, doesn't he? Yeah, we like that bit. And then he tells all the men who are working for him to leave her alone. Yeah. It's good, isn't it? I like that bit. Okay, anybody got anything out? Anything else that was going on? There's one bit that wasn't actually mentioned in the story, but when you read Leviticus, it also tells farmers who are planting these fields not to harvest all the way to the edge of the field so that there's actually food available on the edges for people who come, like Ruth, to glean. Anybody got anything else? Down the front?
They were telling their friends to welcome strangers wherever they came from.
Sorry, they were telling friends... Sorry, the mic went really boomy, so I'm not sure I heard what you said. They were telling their friends to welcome strangers as well. Yeah, so the whole community was involved in this. The whole community was looking out for people and making sure that they were involved. Great, you've done really, really well. Now, after this period, I think we can probably blank that now because it's a bit distracting. After this period, obviously Jesus comes along later on, and he teaches his disciples similar rules, but in a different context. So in Boaz's time, they were in Judah, and they ran the country. So Boaz and his people had learnt these rules from God. That meant that when people came into their country, that they should look after them. By the time of Jesus, that had changed, because actually they didn't run their country anymore. The Romans ran their country. And Jesus said, well, use your brains, use your creativity. What does it look like now to look after people who are on the outside, who are on the edge? To look after people who haven't got a very good reputation in the community? To look after people who are ill, and people are scared of them in case they get ill as well? And Jesus said, you should be looking out for these outsiders in every situation, and you should be doing something wherever people come within reach. Do you remember the story of the Good Samaritan? Well, the question was, who is my neighbour? And the answer is, your neighbour is anybody who is in need, who you come across. So why don't you have a little discussion just where you are with the people nearest to you? Perhaps if you came as a family or with friends, you might want to talk to them. Or if you're here on your own, you might want to just introduce yourself. Hopefully everybody's quite friendly here and has learned some of those rules that Boaz and his people knew. Friendly to outsiders. Why don't you have a little chat with people near you? So what does that look like now, here and now, for us? If in Boaz's time it meant, well, we'll leave some of the crop so that people can come and collect it. Well, I don't know about you, but I haven't done a lot of farming recently. In Jesus' time, if it looked like including people who were ostracized on the edge, what does it look like now for us? Why don't you have a discussion about that? And thank you so much to Thomas and to Sam. Thank you for your help, mate. Well, it really sounds like you've got lots of good ideas. It sounds like you're having lots of good discussions, but we're going to carry on. Amy's going to come in a moment and help us to explore a bit more. Like, what does it look like to look after other people, to help them to be nurtured and to flourish?
So do take a seat. So I was reflecting a little bit just then about the story that we've heard about Ruth and Naomi and Boaz. And I was thinking, like, not an awful lot has changed, has it really? I was thinking about because family in Ruth and Naomi's situation doesn't look like how we might expect family to look. Because you've got Ruth is the daughter-in-law of Naomi. It's not her mother, it's her mother-in-law. And they have made a connection, and they are family. And they have a situation which means that they have to move somewhere else, and they have needs, and they are, you know, a bit sort of desperate, and then they need a bit of a rescuer who is in the form of Boaz. And it's a story which you can still relate to now and has resonance in our world. So I was wondering about what it would be like if Ruth and Naomi were 21st century people and they were to arrive in London now. So I'd like to share with you now a clip of one of my favourite films, actually, Paddington, where Paddington arrives in London and he's looking for somewhere to live. So let's watch that film.
Can you just go away, please? Oh, I need to look presentable.
That's so boring.
Well, I'm sorry you all feel like that, but it was my week to choose, and personally, I enjoyed the Victorian wool experience.
Well, at least you spent some time together as a family.
And we certainly learnt a lot about wool.
Did you have fun, Pumpkin?
It's Judy, and it was fine until you jumped in the lake.
It's a Victorian bathing pond, darling. It's what you're supposed to do.
Not naked.
Oh, forgot my costumes.
Jonathan, don't jump like that. 7% of childhood accidents start with jumping.
But if I'm going to be an astronaut...
Well, you're not going to be an astronaut.
You can be whatever you want, Peanut.
Oh, stranger danger.
What?
Keep your eyes down. There's some sort of bear over there. Probably sewing something. Good evening. No, thank you. Yeah. Must be doing something wrong. Coming down in stair rods, isn't it?
Yes.
Mum!
I hope you don't mind me asking, but shouldn't you be at home?
Oh, yes, I should. But I haven't quite worked out how to find one.
Well, where are your parents?
Oh, they died when I was small.
Here we go.
All I have left is my aunt.
And where's she?
Darkest Peru, in the home for retired bears.
Yeah, of course she is.
How did you get here?
I stowed away in a lifeboat.
Cool.
And ate marmalade. Did you know bears like marmalade?
I didn't even know bears could talk.
Oh, well, I'm a very rare bear. There aren't many of us left.
And what are you going to do now?
Well, I thought I would probably just sleep over there in that bin.
That's the spirit.
Why don't we find you some help?
Oh, yes, please. If you're sure it's no trouble.
Of course it isn't. Is it, darling?
Not at all.
I love that because it's such a British response, isn't it, I think, to those sorts of situations. But it does make us think, doesn't it, about how we respond to those in need. We've sort of talked about how the Bible encourages us to welcome the stranger. But what does that look like in our world, in our circumstances? Earlier on in that film, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but there's a situation which causes Paddington to be a refugee in London. His home is destroyed in Peru. Step forward. Forward. Is that better? I don't know what I'm doing. I'm saying off things. So his homeland is destroyed in Peru, and so his aunt, because he's already an orphan, so he's looked after by his aunt, puts him on a boat to London. And she sends him off because she thinks that would be the best thing for him. And both in the books and in the film, she says to him something rather special. She says, "Long ago, people in England sent their children by train with labels around their necks so they could be taken care of by complete strangers in the countryside where it was safe. They will not have forgotten how to treat strangers." Of course, she's talking about there is the evacuees in the Second World War. But I think it's quite interesting when you think about how we respond to those strangers arriving in our country in the light of that. So, back to mothering. Mothering. Can I ask you, can I have the thingy? Yeah, is it on? Can I ask you what characteristics there are present in mothering? And I'm not just meaning in mums, because we've already established mothering isn't just done by mums. So can I ask you, tell me what kind of characteristics are there in mothering?
Nurturing.
Nurturing, that's a fabulous word, isn't it? Francis, did you want to add?
Caring.
So, caring, yes, absolutely. Any others? Sorry?
Kindness.
Kindness, well, that is a very underrated virtue, but it's very important, yes. Any over here?
Protection.
Sorry?
Protection.
Protection, yes, protecting. What have you got here?
Loving.
Loving, yes. Really loving. What about over here? Any characteristics you can think of about mothering?
Cuddles.
Cuddles. Cuddles are really important, aren't they? Hugs and cuddles.
Loving.
Loving. Any others you can think of? No?
Food and drink.
Oh, we're providing stuff for people. Yes, food and drink's all really important, isn't it, all of that? Now, all of those characteristics, are they things that are just relevant to women and women who've had babies? No, they're not, are they? They really aren't. I'll give you that back. And if those things that we are called to be and do, that the Bible calls us to be when we respond to the stranger, if it was just down to women who've had babies, we wouldn't at all be able to fulfil God's call on our lives, would we, or the mission of God in the world. It requires all of us to be involved. So how can we become involved in our world now? Who are those strangers in our world? Well, I've got some random pictures off of the internet that I found. There's a family that could be Ruth, once she'd settled there, with some, perhaps she'd got married, had some children. There's a Syrian refugees in Jordan. We've got Palestinian refugees in Iraq. You can see there that they've actually made a really nice-looking home there, but it is basically a tent that they are living in there. These are Burundian refugees in Rwanda. And some Syrian refugees in the UK. So we've got stories like Ruth and Naomi happening all over the globe, and in the UK and in our community. So how are we going to respond? How do we respond to the needs in our community and in the wider world? Well, actually, we have been given a way in which we can respond with the Bishop's Lent Appeal. I don't know if you were given one this morning when you came in, but they are at the back of the church. This is the leaflet about the Bishop's Lent Appeal. So every Lent, the Bishop of Portsmouth chooses some charities, and we do collections, and the money goes to those. And this year, interestingly, his focus is on refugee and neighbour. So if you haven't had a read of that, have a read of that. Pick one up at the back at some point later on. They're going to be looking at... the Bishop's going to be with a particular focus on Christian aid and their work across the whole world, and also local charities as well. Now, if you don't know about what's going on locally, it's worth finding out what you might be able to support or get involved with. There is a charity in Portsmouth called Friends Without Borders, and they work with refugees who end up in Portsmouth. All the cities get lots of refugees. And of course, imagining someone like Naomi and Ruth arriving in a different culture, people don't always have problems with language, they have problems accessing legal support, and Friends Without Borders tries to assist with that. They provide a service called Access to Justice, which is free legal advice. They give some money towards people who are destitute, and they advise lots and lots of people. So you can support by donating, and you can support by volunteering and going down. They have a drop-in. So that's something that's local to us, where we can help people just like Ruth and Naomi. But this is a personal thing, isn't it? It's not just about the things we see on the news. It is about refugees, but it's also about the strangers, the people on the outside, the vulnerable, the excluded in our communities. So I wonder, how can we respond? How can we personally make a difference in our families, our communities, and in the wider world? Following that example of Boaz.